Welcome to Maryland Solutions with Reverend Maryland, the speaker for the new millennium. Join Maryland as she talks with guests offering a wide range of talents and information. And now, here's Maryland.
Welcome to Maryland Solutions on this Wednesday at noon. And I'm glad you tuned in. I'm so glad you're with us today. Our guest today is Dr. Gregory Little, author of The Mound Builders, Edgar Casey's Forgotten Record of Ancient America. First, I'd like my listeners to remember to tell the sponsors of this show that they've been listening to them on the radio, and they're so glad they are able to do that, and let them know that you enjoy their program and let them know that you're listening. So please do contact the sponsors of this show, use their services, and let them know you're around. They'll appreciate it, too. Now I'd like to introduce Dr. Greg Little, who is a prolific writer and criminal justice specialist who is well known in several fields. He is a nationally certified psychologist, NLPC, who has authored texts in psychopharmacology.
Hard to say, isn't it?
Right? Yeah, it's quite a long word here. Mm-hmm. And obesity, criminal personality, and psychology. He is part Seneca Indian, and Dr. Little became interested in Native American Indian mounds in 1984 while researching the effects of ancient rituals on brain chemistry. Interesting. Since then, he has written over 100 articles on archaeology and mounds. His latest book, titled Mound Builders, Edgar Casey's Forgotten History of Ancient America, is the culmination of research he's had and began for a series of scientific findings that began in 1997 and shattered American archaeologists' fundamental beliefs about ancient American history. He is co-author of the monthly newsletter, Ancient Mysteries, published by Casey's Virginia Beach-based Association for Research and Enlightenment. He also maintains the organization's website on ancient mysteries, www.edgarcaseyoneword.org/am. And we're so glad to have you here today, Dr. Little.
Well, thank you, Marilyn. It's a pleasure to be here, and I hope something of value will come out of this for your listeners.
Well, I've been finding your book really intriguing.
Well, thank you.
I am a history buff, and I've always been interested in this kind of information, only they always told us it began with Christopher Columbus, and you have definitely disproved that.
Oh, yeah. The history of ancient America is far more complex than anybody thought. And in just the past 5 years or so, so much information has come out that really shows that we know next to nothing about what really happened in ancient America.
That's why I found your book. Like, I didn't want to put it down because there was always something new and very interesting coming along, and I found it very well researched.
Well, thank you. Well, we really did scour the literature, and we put just about everything that is known professionally from the fields of genetics and from actual archaeological digs. And we went beyond American archaeologists and got information from archaeologists in other countries. And actually, American archaeologists do not put much credence in the statements of archaeologists from other countries, which that's a little bias that Americans have in a lot of fields.
Well, I found that the archaeologists, from your point of view in reading the book, were very biased until about 1997.
Yeah, and then a lot of them kind of came out of the closet and came forward and said point blank that they had been suppressed. They actually went back to sites where they were supposed to stop digging when they hit a layer called the Clovis layer. And because, as one of them put it pretty aptly, he said, there is no way that we're going to dig below a layer that we know nothing could be below it. And so they always stopped when they hit the Clovis Point layer, which was about 9500 BC. And when they went back and dug at these sites, they found more and more artifacts below that 10,000 BC layer.
Well, there were some fascinating things you've talked about in your book that they found out below that layer.
Oh, yeah.
Initially, I understand you were skeptical about Edgar Casey's history and essentially discounted his ideas. What happened to change your mind?
Well, that kind of goes way back. I've had an interest in Casey's health readings for a long, long time. Casey, according to the American Medical Association, Casey is considered the father of the holistic health movement. And I always knew that Casey's health readings were pretty accurate and that there was a tremendous amount of information in those that was very helpful. It has been researched several times. There's three different studies published on Casey's health readings, and all of those have shown that 85 to 88% of everything Casey said about health is just dead on. And that's pretty astonishing for a psychic who didn't even see most of the people that he was diagnosing and then prescribing some sort of treatment regimen for. So while I knew his health readings were pretty accurate, I was skeptical about his history readings because Casey talked about a history of America and a history of the world that actually is just diametrically opposed to everything that archaeology had told us. For example, Casey told us that there were people in various parts of the earth 10 million years ago. Now, when I use the term people, I don't mean modern man. But he said, like in the 1920s, he told us that human-like creatures had existed 10 to 12 million years ago. Now, science today has pushed it back to about 8 million years, and every year they find more, and it keeps pushing back the dawn of what we say is the beginnings of humanity. And I have a feeling that eventually they'll push it back to 10 or 12 million years ago.
Wow.
But Casey also said there were people in the Americas in 50,000 B.C., and he talked about multiple migrations here, and it just, all that went against what archaeology had in their textbooks.
What was the key event in archaeology that collapsed their beliefs?
Well, it took the collapse of what's called the Clovis Barrier, and that occurred in 1997. The Clovis Barrier is this. Clovis is a culture which entered the Americas around 9,500 B.C. to sometime maybe around 10,000 B.C. And they had a very particular type of point, which was first discovered in the site of Clovis, New Mexico. So they simply named the Clovis people after the site where the first artifacts were found. And so that was accepted as the earliest man in the Americas, and that was in the late 1930s when that discovery was made. And for 70 years then, archaeology has maintained the point of view that the first people came in were the Clovis people. They came in across Beringia, which was the land bridge that then connected Siberian Asia to Alaska. And that was during the last ice age, and sea levels were 300 feet lower than they are today, so it exposed some land. And for this window of around 2,000 years, starting in around 10,000 B.C., the glaciers had melted in the middle of this land bridge, allowing the Siberian nomads to come through. And within 2,000 years, they occupied virtually all of the Americas. And by the time Columbus got here, there were 57 million people in the Americas.
Wow, that's not what the history books would lead us to believe.
Well, that's what they've said, point blank. That is the history of ancient America, according to all history books, and mainstream archaeology has textbook after textbook that says that's what happened, and anybody that goes against that view was either dubbed a crank or a cold archaeologist or a crackpot. And even archaeologists that disagreed with it had to be silent for a long time. But in 1997, the Clovis Barrier collapsed, and it collapsed in Monte Verde, Chile, which is in southern Chile. A panel of archaeologists went down to look at evidence that a University of Kentucky archaeologist had been fiddling with for years. And this large panel decided unanimously that someone had been at this site in Monte Verde 2,000 years before Clovis people were here. On the very day that they made the announcement, and it actually got a lot of international attention, on the very day, they dug even deeper below that layer, and they found evidence that the site had been occupied as long ago as 33,000 B.C.
Wow.
So that collapsed it. Archaeologists then immediately started going back to sites all over America, digging below the Clovis Barrier, and lo and behold, they found artifacts all over the place.
That collapsed.
It's like a house of cards came down, and then all this genetic evidence came out that supported the earlier migrations, and archaeology is in tremendous turmoil now because of all this.
Well, they didn't have a lot of good things to say about Casey's comments about ancient America. Why did they think he was so incredible?
Well, I'll tell you, in that book, the very first thing, and I have to say I did that. I had two co-authors on the book, but I wrote the first section, and that approaches Casey as a cult archaeologist. And I actually became familiar with that material through a nephew who was working on a master's degree in archaeology at the time. And one day I was talking with my nephew, and we got to talking about Edgar Casey, and he used the term cult archaeologist. And I said, well, Casey was not an archaeologist, and really he wasn't a cultist either. And he said, well, that's what his textbook said. So I asked him, I wanted to see his textbook, so I wound up buying a couple of them. And there are two textbooks, both of which call Casey a crank and a cult archaeologist. One of them actually was written by the chairman of the Harvard Archaeology Department for 30 years. He's now retired. But in it, they make all these statements about Casey. I'll give you one example from that guy. He said that he had read the Casey readings and that the name Churchward came up again and again, and that 30% of all of Casey's readings were about Atlantis, and on he went. And the name Churchward never came up in a single Casey reading. Churchward was the guy, James Churchward was a fellow who in the 1920s authored a series of books on Lemuria or Mu, which was a lost continent in the Pacific. And what I found in my interviews with these archaeologists was that they had actually read two books on Atlantis by one of Edgar Casey's son, and they believed that the books on Atlantis were the Edgar Casey readings. One of the archaeologists, a fellow in, he's very well known. I don't even need to say who he is, but he's real well known. He was extremely embarrassed by it. He promised me that he would correct his textbooks, and everything else that fella had said in his book was wrong, too. And he looked up his sources, and he said, you know, I gave references in the book, but none of the references are correct, and the truth of the matter is, I don't know where I got this, except this is what I was told when I was in graduate school, and I wrote it all down as if it was true.
Oh, well, we'll be coming back shortly, Greg, and finding out more about what Casey's story of Atlantic ancient America is. After these words, please stay tuned, and we don't leave that dial. Just stay tuned. You're going to hear a lot more interesting information. Bye-bye. Welcome back to Maryland Solutions. We're so glad you're listening today. And I want to welcome Puyallup Nissan onto our sponsors list. And hopefully you will go down and enjoy their birthday celebration for April. 26 years in business in Puyallup. And they're still there going strong. And they want to share that celebration with you. I also want to say that Crystal Voyage is now carrying a limited and selected line of My Angel Art. They are limited editions. The inspirational plaques and magnets, and I have some signed books there if you're interested in Roses Have Thorns, which I've written, which is my spiritual journey. So stop by and choose your favorite angel or gift item, or maybe you'd like to be interested in reading my book, and she would be glad to have them available for everybody coming by. Also, I want to announce my classes of Growing in Relationships with a Higher Power, Yourself, and Others will be held on two Saturdays in May. Please reserve your place ahead of time for the classes on May 4th and May 18th by calling me at 253-845-4907 or emailing me at Marilyn, M-A-R-I-L-Y-N, at Angelica's Gifts, one word, Angelicasgifts.com. Marilyn at Angelicasgifts.com will be leaving you a space for your coming to the class and enjoying it. I'm sure you will. There'll be films and group work interaction, lots of experiences for you to grow. And we'll have a good time each Saturday. So they do build on each Saturday, so hopefully you can come to both and enjoy both. That's May 4th and May 18th. Now we want to get back with Greg and find out what Casey's story of ancient America was.
Okay. The way you come up with this story with Casey, and that's the problem archaeologists have, Casey did nearly 15,000 readings, which are on 50,000 pages of material. And no one ever said, Edgar, give us the history of ancient America. But what did happen was, in the course of a type of reading which he gave called a life reading, bits and pieces of this history would come out. And they really didn't ask him many follow-up questions about it. So there were 68 different readings that we found that gave this information. But basically, Casey said there were already people in America before 50,000 B.C. A lot of them came from the west, which would fit could fit Siberia. But he said that they came from a continent which had been in the Pacific called Lemuria. Most of them did. But then, in roughly 50,000 B.C., there was an influx of people into America from the west. And then in 28,000 B.C., people came here from the South Pacific and from China, both of which he gave us the date, and he told us where they came from. And then he said, also in 28,000 B.C., another group came from the west. And in 10,000 B.C., another group came from the west, another group came from the South Pacific Islands, and there was an influx of Atlanteans from that continent before it sank, and the date he gave was 10,014 B.C. The final piece to this is he said in 3,000 B.C., and this to me is really interesting because of the way evidence has come up on it, but he said in 3000 B.C., a group came by boat. He called this group the Remnants of Lost Tribes. That's all the information he gave about them. But he said they came first to the southernmost portion of America. They remained at this area for a period of time. They then went south to the area around Mexico City, which already had pyramid construction going on. And after remaining there for a while, he said some very negative or bad things started happening, which was the initiation of human sacrifice. And that would have occurred sometime after 3000 B.C., maybe in the 2500 B.C. range. And that group then, the descendants of these remnants of lost tribes joined up with a band of people from the Yucatan who were also fleeing the human sacrifice, and they went back to the place near the spot where the original group of lost tribes had landed in 3000 B.C., and from there they went up the Mississippi River into Ohio where they began mound building. So that's pretty specific, and that gave us that's his history, and that gave us enough information to really check out exactly how the current archaeological research and the findings either match or go against Casey.
Well, I'm really excited because this Sunday I'll be meeting one of your co-authors, John Van Auken, and going with him to explore those pyramids you just mentioned about down by Mexico City.
Ah, yes.
I'm going with him on that trip and looking forward to it greatly.
You will have a good time.
Yeah, I think it'll be fun. I've gone with him on some other trips, and I've really enjoyed his knowledge of being able to explain things. And then you mentioned, though, the lost tribes. This is the pre-Hebrew people, or were they Hebrews that came to the Americas?
Well, that we don't know. They couldn't have been Hebrews because Hebrews supposedly didn't exist in 3000 B.C., and the lost tribes idea actually goes to around the year 700. But what we believe is this. Casey used that term lost tribes quite a bit. And there is evidence that even before 3000 BC or right around it. That would be the time traditionally when the Tower of Babel was present. And when the Tower of Babel occurred, there was a scattering of humanity, according to the biblical story.
Right.
And we think that is probably what this term relates to. So we call them pre-Semitics or Semitics, and there is evidence that whoever actually started the very first mound building in Louisiana, near the southernmost part of the of America, whoever started it did it there, and they did it right around that 3000 BC, and actually that was discovered in the year 1997 also. That's one of the finds that helped collapse archaeologists' beliefs.
Well, you have your book full of pictures and diagrams. One of the diagrams showed a menorah on top of a mound.
That was in Milford, Ohio. This particular thing, now that people hear this thing about a menorah, what the ancient mound builders did, in not just building what most people think of as mounds, which are conical or cone-like shaped burials, but they built earthen pyramids, truncated pyramids, which is a flat-top pyramid, and they built huge effigy mounds. They built octagons and circles that were made out of earth, but this menorah was made out of piled-up earth that was about 5 feet high. The candelabra or the menorah had 9 points to it, and the length of it, to give you an idea of the size, the length of each of the candlesticks on this thing were 2,100 feet long. So you've got a gigantic thing built on the earth, and surrounding this thing was another whole set of earthworks, which look almost precisely like an oil lamp.
Mm-hmm.
And the story of the nine-pointed menorah and the oil lamp goes back to a siege in Jerusalem, and when an oil lamp mysteriously and miraculously burned for 8 days. And that's what that menorah represents. So there is evidence that someone, that this would probably have occurred even later than the 3000 BC, not earlier, but later than it. And there's other evidence that some Hebrews, in fact, did come here, and that evidence is getting stronger and stronger almost every day.
Interesting. How is this genetic evidence playing out in the European archaeology?
Well, the genetic evidence is, to me, is some of the most interesting. Of course, that's kind of my background. The textbook psychopharmacology goes into genetics quite a bit. But, of course, I don't talk about the archaeological component. There's a type of genetic testing now which is called mitochondrial DNA analysis. And mitochondria are little organelles that are found in virtually every cell in the human body. In fact, you can get ancient remains and you can pull out the mitochondria from the cells, even though these remains might have been in the earth for 5, 6, 8, 10,000 years. And usually you can test these remains to find out what branch of humanity the remains came from. So in America, there are 5 types of mitochondrial DNA that have been discovered. In Europe, there are many more different types of mitochondrial DNA. But one interesting thing is, Casey talked about these Atlanteans in 10,000 BC who came to America. He also told us at that exact same time, some of them went to what was then called Iberia, which is like Spain and Portugal and part of France. And he said they went to the Pyrenees Mountains, and they apparently are related to the Basque people that live in that area. Now, the ancient Basque DNA has always believed to have been a type that entered that area of the world in about 7,000-8,000 BC. But what they found when they actually went into Basque cemeteries and they removed remains, they didn't find any of the mitochondrial DNA they thought they would. In fact, they found this really mysterious type called X. And they're done by letters, A, B, C, D, E, F, G, all the way through. There's 43 different kinds of mitochondrial DNA. X has also turned up in 2% of Native Americans, including in the Iroquois, which is where Casey said many of the Atlanteans went. They merged with the modern with the Iroquois. And it also, X is found in the Gobi Desert, which was a surprise. That happened 2 weeks before we sent this book off for its final, the page proofs off. The mitochondrial DNA type X was found in the Gobi Desert, which kind of put the capstone on all this, because Casey would have predicted that it was there, if it is Atlantean DNA.
We're going to take a break right here, Greg. And we'll be back shortly with more after the messages. And don't go away, because we're finding out some information that's new to a lot of people. Maybe you haven't even heard about this before. So stay tuned for some interesting and fascinating brand new information. Don't miss it. We'll be back. Solutions. We're glad you're here today. We're having a fascinating discussion with Greg Little, who has done a tremendous amount of research and over the last several years about mound builders, Edgar Casey's Forgotten Record of Ancient America. And this goes into all kinds of information you won't find in our history books. I think that's terrific. I really do like to see new information coming out that's more accurate. We want to ask Greg and in just a minute, some questions again. But if you want to remember to call and visit the people who sponsor our program, be sure and let them know you heard their message on this show. Also, if you are wanting to call me for counseling, classes, or to make a contribution to continue this program, you can reach me at 253-845-4907. Or email me if you want to sign up for my classes at Marilyn@AngelicasGifts.com. We'll be glad to have you as part of our group. So be sure and let me know that you're interested. And if you are wanting to sponsor this show yourself, call Clay or myself. If you call the radio station, the number is 253-584-1480. If you want to sponsor this show and want to reach me to do that, call 253-845-4907. We're always looking for your help and your support. All right. Greg, let's go back to our questions here that we're talking about today. How many mounds existed when the first European explorers arrived?
Well, it's believed now it was about 200,000.
Wow, that many.
Yeah, I'm kidding. That's in America alone. We're not talking about Central America or South America, just America itself, 200,000.
Well, how many of those still exist?
That's a really good question, and it has a sad answer. The answer is it's probably around 10,000.
Ooh, big
change. No one knows the exact number, because they're being destroyed as we speak, little by little now. Now, they were destroyed very quickly in the 1800s and the early 1900s, and it's slowed down since the 1980s and the 70s and 80s. It slowed down a bit.
Well, I was just talking with someone in the station. We were discussing our topic for today before I went on the air, and he mentioned he'd interviewed somebody from Centralia, Washington, when there are some mounds there.
Mm-hmm. Yes, that's true.
And
we have mounds there called Mimi Mounds.
Oh, what does that mean?
Well, that's actually a Native American term. There are some mounds in the western states, in Oregon and Washington State. There are two types that you find there. One type is actual small conical burial mounds that are Native American, and then there are naturally forming, they're little hillocks that look like mounds, and there can be hundreds of them. And it's believed they were formed during the last ice age as the glaciers receded. But in truth, they're kind of a mystery. Nobody really knows. And in some sites, there's hundreds of these together.
Interesting. We also have another local bit of information here that you exposed in your book about the Kennewick Man. That's a city that's across the mountains from western Washington, where we are located right now. But many people do go to Kennewick and are very familiar in our state with that location. What can you tell us about the Kennewick Man?
Well, I can tell you that what people have said that he's was a Caucasian is not, I won't say it's not true, but I will say that we really don't know exactly what Kennewick man was or where he came from. Very clearly, he is an ancestor of Native Americans, because current Native Americans tend to be a mixture of many, many different groups. But Kennewick man is, when the first reports came out that he looked Caucasoid, that's the term that was used, that was pretty premature. And they tried mitochondrial DNA testing on several parts of the bones. But unfortunately, this is one of the small percentage of cases where they were not able to extract the intact mitochondria. So they really could not say what group the Kennewick bones came from. So they're currently locked up, and it's still in court. And the truth is, other than that, not much is being done. And it's a shame, but the American courts are going to wind up deciding the direction that that type of archaeology goes in America.
Well, sometimes those things happen against our, what's expedient.
Yeah, well, I mean, there is a law. I do understand the Native American side of the law. I'm part Native American myself, part Seneca, like you said in the beginning of the show. I would like to see the bones reburied, but I would like to see genetic testing done first. But then I have an interest in finding out what happened in ancient America, as opposed to denying it. I'd really like to know. And to me, it kind of enriches and deepens one's cultural heritage, as opposed to the idea that it robs you of your heritage. But that's just one side of this, and there are more than two sides on it.
Well, I support your viewpoint. I think that's great. You've talked about some mound complexes that appear to be built to represent Atlantis, and next week our speaker will be Frank Joseph, who has done extensive researching of Atlantis and Lemuria. What can you tell me about these mounds that were built to represent Atlantis?
Well, there is in Portsmouth, Ohio. Portsmouth is in southern Ohio on the Ohio River. In Portsmouth, Ohio, in around 500 BC, this incredible complex was built. And it had several horseshoe-shaped earthen embankments, and they're gigantic. One of the horseshoes is still there. It's in a park in Upper Portsmouth. And the other one, unfortunately, was destroyed, and they set an elementary school on top of it. but from this area where these, from that area in Upper Portsmouth on the top of a mountain where the horseshoe embankments were, there were, I hate the term walkways because people think that they're real narrow, but these were paths that were flattened or graded. And they were 160 feet wide, which is as wide as a modern highway. And paralleling them on both sides, enclosing them, were walls of earth that ran. It's 4 miles one direction down to the Ohio River, and they ran continuously for 4 miles to the Ohio River, picked up on the other side of the Ohio River in Kentucky, ran another mile and a half to this gigantic complex of a central mound, a large central mound, that then had concentric rings of raised land and moats, water around it. And it was an exact replica of Plato's Atlantis description. It fits it to a T. It is done in proportion, that is, it is reduced in size. Archaeologists, actually a few years ago, it was completely destroyed before a landscaping firm built a building right on top of the area. But anyway, it was an exact duplicate of Atlantis. It even had it's almost like a cross pattern in it where water would run through like canals. There is another site in Marietta, Ohio, which has something very similar. In fact, a lot of that still remains today. That the central mound at Marietta exists, and the moat still exists around it. And when it rains, the moat fills up with water. So there are several of these mound sites that look just exactly like Plato's Atlantis, and we think that they were built to represent where these folks came from.
Interesting. That leads more great credence to the saying that Atlantis is not a myth.
Well, I do believe there's actually more evidence that something existed. I don't know if Atlantis was this gigantic continent in the middle of the Atlantic Ocean. Of course, Plato never said it was in the middle of the ocean, and Casey certainly didn't say it was in the middle of the Atlantic. But I do believe that there is more evidence that something existed than it didn't. In fact, there are. Plato was the first to talk about it, but there were many ancient historians after Plato who talked about Atlantis, at least a dozen. But archaeologists really bristle. That's one of their that's one of the terms that really gets them upset, because they think people believe Atlantis was a tremendously advanced culture that had jet planes and elevators and cars and nuclear weapons and so on, and there's just no evidence of that, so they get upset about it.
Well, what was the purpose of all these mounds?
Well, what Casey said was that they were representations of ancient Atlantis and the Yucatan experience and also the Gobi experience. And that Gobi thing is real interesting because until roughly 1945, and even then nobody knew really, but in 1945, mounds identical to those found in the United States were found in an area just south of the southern Gobi. And there are thousands of mounds in that part of what is today China that are identical to these. And that's also the area where this haplogroup X was found, which we think is Atlantean DNA. In addition, we know that the mounds to the Native Americans were some sort of, I like to use the term magic machines, but they were connectors, devices, earthen devices that were used to connect the physical world that we live in with the two spiritual worlds, an upper spiritual world and a lower spiritual world. For example, the one at Portsmouth, there's another connector that runs about 7 miles.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about that.
Yeah, and goes to this square, and we think that was a portal to the underworld. I don't like the word, the term hell per se, but I think it was a portal to the underworld. Interestingly, where that exists today, the name of the road is underwater. Underwater.
Okay, well, we're going to have to stop for a minute with that particular spot and come back in just a few minutes for more, listen to more messages. And don't go away. We're finding out more and more about ancient America. Stay tuned. Solutions with Marilyn. We're having an exciting day today with Greg Little, author of Mound Builders, Edgar Casey's Forgotten Record of Ancient America. And Greg, everyone is probably excited and want to get a copy of your book. How can they get in touch with you and get your book?
Well, of course, anybody can get on Amazon.com. They carry everything. But the ARE has an 800 number, which if you order from them or just want some information, give them a call, and they send out a lot of free information. Their number is 1-800-723-1112. That's 1-800-723-1112.
All right, and there's also a website. Isn't there? Speak up, Greg, so we can be sure and everyone can hear.
Okay.
There's a website for your ancient and ancient mysteries.
Oh, yeah.
Newsletter.
Now, a lot of this information we have on the website. It's www.edgarcasey, edgarcasey.org/am.
And they can hear and find more information on the webpage, right?
Absolutely. We've got more information than they're going to probably want to look at.
Well, that's terrific. I am finding out those webpages can be especially interesting if you're in that excited about those topics. It's a wonderful resource.
Oh, yeah. Now, we have, like, updates on the Basque DNA. That's there. We have other current genetic evidence you'll find on the website, plus a lot of other things Casey said, which gives him credibility. Casey talked about the Dead Sea Scrolls before they were found. He didn't call them that, of course, but he talked about them. He talked about the Essenes before we even knew they existed.
Exactly. So this is really old information, but people are just now finding out about
it. That's true, and it's being validated now.
That's the exciting part, to find out that all of this was really actually substantial. Then in the beginning, it was just that people needed to be more aware and acquainted with it.
Mm-hmm. And that's kind of a mystery in this. It's like, here's this guy who's a psychic, probably a very unusual, well, certainly an unusual psychic compared to what we consider psychics today. And all this information came out, and just if he'd never done any of these other readings, just the health readings, it would be incredible to begin with. But he went into all these other things, gave us specific information about things like the Dead Sea Scrolls, the Essenes. He talked about the Nile River and its movements, which have now been validated by recent satellite imagery and satellite radar. And there's so much of it, and it's kind of astonishing to me. And I still don't know. I mean, I kind of accept what he said, but it's so incredible and outside of my experience and the way I live my life that it's kind of overwhelming.
Well, I think it's terrific. It's wonderful information for people that are on the cutting edge. What is the current archaeological view of ancient America, Greg?
Well, the current archaeological view is actually coming closer and closer to Casey now. They believe that there were at least three large migrations into America, and of course that is precisely what Casey said. They believe the very first mounds were built in this place in Poverty Point, but in Watson Break, Louisiana, and that then they don't know where those people went, but then about 400 years later, somebody came from the south, like Casey said, and built the first the next set of mounds in another area of Louisiana. And they know that the mound builders in the Ohio area, some of them came up from the south. So that fits Casey. The waves of migrations, we know now there were three waves, just like Casey said. The only date that differs, they think that there were some people that came from Siberia in about 38,000 B.C., and then they admit they came from the South Pacific and China and Japan in 28,000 B.C., just when Casey said, and that they came from a whole bunch of places in 10,000 B.C., just like Casey said. So all those things are matching almost to a T what Edgar Casey told us in the 1920s and 1930s.
He's exceptionally accurate, isn't he?
Yes, it is. It's astonishing, actually.
Wow, it's amazing. What is the status of research on Atlantis at this point?
Well, that's a good question. We do keep up with that, and a lot of that's on the ARE's website. But the most recent thing to occur is that there is a set of ruins, and they are most probably now man-made, that are under about 2,100 feet of water off Cuba in an area that was probably an island. These ruins have been now photographed and videoed. They have yet to go in and do core samples, and while there had been quite a few skeptics, including myself, of this particular site, just in the last 2 weeks, several geologists in Cuba have come forward, and they now accept that this was probably an island, part of an island, which sank about 8,000 to 10,000 years ago. Now, what there is some... they're going to go and core sample a lot of the stone there, and they have a robot that's been made that can walk the bottom, and it has lights, and it can video a lot closer than what...
Terrific.
Yeah. So that's where that stands.
That's great. What research is Casey's organization doing itself?
Well, some of this research they may well sponsor. They have sponsored a lot of the work in Giza looking for what's called the Hall of Records, which Casey said when the Atlanteans came here in 10,000 B.C. They also went to Giza, where they built a record hall under the right paw of the Sphinx. And so there has been research looking for that for a long time. But Casey also said there were two other Hall of Records built that were identical to the one in Giza. One of those was in near Bimini, and they have spent quite a bit of money on researching the Bimini area. The other one was in an area of the Yucatan, which is now believed to be Piedras Negras, Guatemala. And the ARE actually sent a person down there a couple years ago for a couple of weeks who did a lot of videoing while Brigham Young University was there digging at the site.
What is Brigham Young University trying to dig out in that area? Are they looking for the Hall of Records, too?
Well, Brigham Young is a Mormon-affiliated university, but I have to say that the archaeologists in charge of this are mainstream academics. They never talk about that in any of their papers, but they had a five-year contract to go to Piedras Negras and dig to the bottom of it, and the way the Mayans built sites is they usually built pyramids on top of pyramids on top of pyramids in layers. So they actually went to the bottom, and they found a lot of really interesting things there. They decided not to go back next year because they have so much material they're trying to analyze, and that's about what we know of what they're currently doing. But we've seen pictures, a lot of the things that they've recovered. But personally, yes, I think they're looking for the beginnings of the Mayan civilization, which fits into some Mormon beliefs.
Oh, that's interesting. Well, we are drawing to a close, but I have a real curious question here. Your research has linked Mayans and Native American legends to UFOs. Now, that's a pretty current topic along a lot of people speaking today, and they're very curious about UFOs. How is that all linked together?
Okay, I'll try and answer that quick. I actually wrote a couple of books about that, one in 1990 called People of the Web and another one called Grand Illusions. The Native Americans had a belief about the little people, and there's a lot of legends in them, and in one of the later books that I did, I talked a lot about the legends. And these little people are related to lights seen in the sky, and mounds, lights are seen around mounds, and it's a very complex topic. I actually look at it scientifically in that I believe that the mounds take advantage of geomagnetic anomalies and generate actual energy, and that this energy becomes a plasma. And this, I mean, it may not make sense, but this is mainstream science. But when people get around these plasmas, it affects their brain chemistry, and that is well known. So there's a real complex interplay there, and these objects, which we see as UFOs and the little people and so on, are related to the energies that these mounds are tapping into. And the Native Americans have lots of legends of what happened to people when they interacted with these little creatures.
Wow, that is fascinating. I want everybody to remember next week is we're going to be doing more talking about Atlantis and Lemuria, so be sure and tune in next Wednesday. And if you wish to reach me for counseling classes or to make a contribution to this show, if you're interested in your past lives or wanting to talk to somebody passed over, call me at 253-845-4907. Greg, I want to thank you so much for being here, and thank you for all your wonderful information, and have a great day.
Thank you, Marilyn.
Take care.
Okay. Goodbye.
Bye-bye.
You've been listening to Marilyn Solutions. Listen again next week for another informative show with guests from coast to coast. For a copy of today's program or a copy of her new book, Roses Have Thorns, and videotapes on empowerment and spiritual tools for healing domestic violence, write to KLAY in care of Marilyn Solutions, 10025 Lakewood Drive Southwest, Tacoma, Washington, 98499. Or visit her website at Marilyn@angelicasgifts.com.
Many people are looking for a new direction and a lift in spirit. Hello, I'm Reverend Marilyn, a counselor, teacher for over 30 years, and a spiritual advisor for addictions, codependency, domestic violence, past lives, and holistic healing. Join me every Wednesday at noon for Marilyn's Solutions, a program sure to be of interest to everyone. We will talk with guests from coast to coast, offering a wide range of talents and information. That's Marilyn's Solutions, Wednesdays at noon on your news and information station, KLAY 1180.